Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect? Right now, the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon. You need a playbook that is safe. Allocate some gold right now. Shield your savings with Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. When fear reigns, gold protects the wise. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 5-ounce America Beautiful coin with new IRAs this month. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com right now. noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. Brian Kilmeade joins us. His new book is really great. And we talk about Trump. We talk about current events, statues being torn down, and how Israel is breaking the back of the Democrat Party. Okay, I want to encourage you guys. You have got to get your tickets today to AmFest. It's been there for a couple years. It is a game-changing, life-changing event. It has secured the title of the largest multi-day conservative gathering in history. You know, over 10,000 people attend. You better get your tickets there. They're popping. AmFest has an electrifying environment, leads the charge to fight the American culture war, as we bring you to the epicenter of freedom. The speakers are unbelievable. You might ask, well, when is it? It's December 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, and come on. I mean, these speakers, hold your phone. Tucker Carlson, Glenn Beck, Patrick Bet-David, Candace Owens, Rob Schneider, Roseanne Barr, Dennis Prager, Ali Beth Stuckey, James O'Keefe, Riley Gaines, Ben Carson, Jason Whitlock, Gad Saad, Brandon Tatum, Seth Dillon, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Yanmi Park, Michael Seifert, James Lindsay, Steve Bannon, Eric Metaxas, Donald Trump Jr., Josh Hawley, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, and bigger names than even that to be announced soon. So get your ticket today, amfest.com. That is amfest.com. You're going to really love it. I think when you come, you'll meet new people. Maybe you want to find a husband or a wife. Come to AmFest. Find a best friend. Come to AmFest. Have kids that you're afraid are slipping to the liberal side? Go to AmFest. Have conservative kids that you want to give them the best Christmas gift ever? AmFest.com. Meet your heroes. See them in person. Plus, there's breakouts and media row. It's an incredible, incredible event. AmFest.com. Just coming in a couple weeks, Phoenix, Arizona. We're doing our show live, by the way, from media row. Love seeing all of you taking selfies. It's great. We spent a couple hours there last year. It was really amazing. AmFest.com. This 4-day event is packed with empowering speakers, hundreds of patriotic partner organizations, and the America-loving community that you have been searching for. Don't miss on the amazing concert, too. And let me just, I mean, come on. Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Rob Schneider, Roseanne Barr, Dennis Prager, Ali Beth Stuckey, James O'Keefe, Patrick Bet-David, Glenn Beck. I mean, just drop everything and come to Phoenix. AmFest.com. AmFest.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us for the full hour, someone who I've known for quite some time, a great American and a prolific author, and I've said he is the hardest working man in television. I'm telling you, this guy puts in more hours in media than anybody else. He's up at like 2 a.m. and he's great. He's really fun to watch and listen to on radio. Brian Kilmeade, author of the new book, Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blazed a Path for Racial Equality. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Joy, I appreciate you having me on. It's going to be great. Look at you dressed up. You never used to wear a tie,
no,
did you?
I just, you know.
What happened?
I said, I have to look more like Brian Kilmeade. And so I, one day I'll get the, you know, I was known for the t-shirt and the casual look and trying to move up in life, Brian. So anyway, so glad you're taking the time. Lots to talk about. I want to spend a serious amount of time on the book. Tell us about your new book, Brian.
Well, I just wanted to talk about American history. And I want to move up in time from the president of freedom fighter, Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. And I thought, who's next? And I actually found a link. You have 6-year-old Teddy Roosevelt looking out of his window on Broadway as the body of Abraham Lincoln comes down Broadway, and he's able to see it from his grandfather's apartment. And he would idolize Lincoln the rest of his life. And for Frederick Douglass, he was an inspiration of Booker T. Washington at a time in which wasn't great to be a black man in the South. 1877, they made a major compromise. We'll pull the Union troops out of the South if you guys would let Rutherford B. Hayes become president to break this controversial electoral college. I don't know where I've heard that before, but it was deadlocked in seven separate states, and they just, Hayes had it. So we pulled it out. The South went back to their segregationist ways, made it very tough for black men and women to make a living, to thrive. And that's the place we pick up Booker T. Washington's life, born a slave, and then fights for freedom. And what he did, Charlie, I just think it is, it epitomizes the American dream. You can accomplish anything. And he would not worry about what people said about him. He would not worry about what people thought about the color of his skin. He was going to achieve. And that's what I wanted to see, how that life coincided with Teddy Roosevelt's life, and to see if America could be inspired by this story and how they came together.
And it reminds me of your previous book, and I'm sure it's a theme that you're exploring. The previous book is The President and the Freedom Fighter, Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. This one is not as talked about, though. This one is not as, you know, kind of in the American zeitgeist, which I know that with this book you're attempting to do. And also totally different backgrounds, right? Teddy Roosevelt was born into kind of a upper middle class, you could say elitist life, right? Booker T. Washington was not. Talk about the different biographies and how fate had them meet in the consequential early 1900s, which was the thrust of the Teddy Roosevelt presidency.
I mean, the main thing is people listening right now, they think we're dug into this race, black, white, and Hispanic, and we're not. And if you want to talk about a time in which there was a real difference in the color of people's skin, it was back then. And then people are willing to work their way through it. You have a guy that was born a slave, no shoes until he was nine, slept on the floor his entire youth up until he was got it, hurt his freedom. He remembers going to the house on the plantation and having a Union soldier read the Emancipation Proclamation. When I read that in his biography, I said, I got to do something on him. And I was able to do it. And then I said, how do I link it up with somebody else? And Teddy Roosevelt was all in his biography. That's why I thought I'd do it. And then just have a guy that got himself at 10, 11, just thirsted to learn, was stuck in the salt mines, would maneuver his way out to become an upkeep or a housekeeper for this very rich woman who saw nothing but potential in him, taught him to read and write, made his way to Hampton College, $12, 400 miles on foot, got there. They didn't want to let him in because he was such a mess. He had bad clothes. He had no shower, no money. They finally relented when they realized how hard he worked and how he could clean up an office. And he ends up being their best student, a professor, and then recommended to run a new college at the age of 24. So if people think odds are stacked against him, look at this guy. And for Teddy Roosevelt, everyone's like, yeah, seven generations of wealth. How could you put these two together? Yeah, but when one guy had, he had a horrible intestinal disease as a kid. He had asthma. His parents thought for sure he was going to die. Had no formal school. He had to do, he taught at home. First formal school was Harvard. And he went there where he began to excel, socialize, and overcompensated, so to speak, for all the physical ills he had. So I thought, again, if people want to relate to a story, just because you have wealth, it doesn't mean you have, you're born on third base.
The parallels are striking. And so the main part of the book you're focusing on is racial equality. Teddy Roosevelt doesn't get remembered for that or the pursuit of that. And one of the foils, I'm not sure if you get into this in the book, is obviously W.E.B. Du Bois, who was had a different philosophical approach than Booker T. Washington. But talk about, as far as here, you say, you know, in the kind of book teaser, both men abhorred the decadence and moral rot the nation had fallen into, believed that improvement through careful collaboration was possible, and trusted that the American ideals of individual liberty and hard work could propel the neediest toward success if only holding them back would step aside. Talk more about, in the Teddy Roosevelt presidency, what he did to try and create a more perfect union.
What he tried to do is said, and you might have heard this before, Booker T. Washington was going to be advisor. He's like, I don't really know much about the South. I need to know the best judges, the best postmasters, the best dockmaster. I need to know who's going to be able to run the shipyards. Would you be able to give me those names? And don't worry about, don't tell me about their nationality, the color of their skin, or their gender. I just want the best people. And he was a key advisor. So this guy, born a slave at 9 years old, is now advising the president, who would speak at a commencement address at Tuskegee. So if America's that bad, and that polarized and that racist. Why was this happening? And in the South, when people had preconceived notions because of the way they were brought up or the culture they were in, he wouldn't get mad at him. He would just move on. So, Charlie, one of the best things I learned from this book is if you get mad at somebody, you're giving them power. This guy would not be upset if you said the most racist thing to him. He's like, well, I'll move on. Who can help me? Andrew Carnegie can help me. Who can help me? Rosenwald could help me. The founder of Sears. Who could help me? J.P. Morgan and William McKinley, Grover Cleveland, and ultimately Teddy Roosevelt. And for Roosevelt, he saw nothing but possibility in America. He did just about everything, and he wasn't opposed to grinding it out. So that's what I think he saw in Booker T. Washington. But at the same time, his mom was from the Confederacy. She's from the South. Her two brothers were officers for Robert E. Lee. So if he's in his house and he's growing up and he's hearing his mom's perspective on America, much like you're susceptible to your parents, he heard all that. He still said, okay, I'm going to make my own judgment. And with Booker T. Washington, you saw him, saw nothing but a great man. You didn't see him judging by his race. But Teddy Roosevelt was somewhat of his times. You hear some things that, you know, show you had blind spots. But I just think at a time in which America is so focused on race, people needed a perspective on how far we've come and we're the most successful multicultural country in the history of the world.
So I want to zero in on this for a second. The American history, I want to make sure I get this right. So, yeah, it was the equestrian statue that was taken down of Teddy Roosevelt on the American Museum of Natural History. That's right. Because they said that Teddy Roosevelt was racist or racially insensitive. You're a historian, Brian. What is your response to that?
He's a person of his times. It was a statue. I'm doing a special real quick with Ray Kelly in the history of law enforcement. And he goes, yeah, meet me by my apartment. I want to walk by. Teddy Roosevelt was my idol. We look up and it's boxed. It's boxed up because an Indian was walking, American Indian was walking, and a black man was walking next to Teddy Roosevelt on a horse and made him look superior. And I thought to myself, you got to be kidding me. They took him out from the museum that is full of all of his trophies and game that he shot and the same fossils he's recovered that his parents found it. So now they have it out in North Dakota where his library is going to be. It's an embarrassment. I mean, this guy was not perfect when it came to race. But, man, listen to what Booker T. Washington said. The quote, besides Lincoln, no one has taken more of an interest and helped the African American, the Negro race more than President Teddy Roosevelt. Okay, that should have been enough to keep a statue.
Hey, everybody, I want to introduce you to Artillery Tea Company. Artillery Tea is the premium tea for freedom-loving patriots. I love tea. I drink green tea almost all day, I could tell you. By the way, the health benefits of tea are amazing, especially green tea. Helps you lose weight. It's actually better for you than caffeine. I've been trying not to drink too much coffee. It's not going great, but tea is a great substitute. Their tea is whole leaf for a more full-bodied flavor. Plus, you can brew each bag twice, which gives you about 30 cups per tin. It's a great deal. They got all the flavors you want, Earl Grey, peach, apricot, green tea, chamomile, and many others. I'm a big tea guy, and you should be too. Here's the best part. Portions of all sales is donated to veteran and first responders. Visit artilleryteaco.com. That is artilleryteaco.com and support these guys. Not only do they make the best teas on the market, but you're also supporting veterans and first responders through every purchase. So check it out now, artilleryteaco.com. Check it out right now. All these smug elitists in New York take down the Teddy Roosevelt statue because it makes them feel good. But does that really warrant a cancellation in the modern era, Brian Kilmeade?
Hey, Charlie, they took Thomas Jefferson out of the city council, you know, out of the city hall. It's unbelievable. It's right. But they voted 2 weeks. Was it 3 weeks ago? They were voting on whether to take Washington out of New York. Do you believe this? The first White House was in New York City. I mean, Washington said goodbye to his troops in New York City, Francis Tavern. There was he thanked his spies on Long Island after becoming president. In New York, and they're like, we're going to debate on whether to take him down or not. I mean, it's absolutely insane, but I don't know what they're going to vote on. Columbus has too many Italians here, so I don't think they're going to do that, but who knows what's going to happen. So to me, it was a fever during the Trump years, it was starting to come back again. My sense is people will start sobering up when people start speaking out and saying there are no perfect people, but their impact on the country is undeniable. Unless, of course, you find out that it's not and they're working against us, you might want to think about taking the Benedict Arnold statue down if you have one. I got it, unless you're doing a tribute to double agents. But for the most part, we are a country that was born like every other country. Every continent had slaves. In the South, most houses, most plantations had slaves. Nobody condones it. But without those slave owners, we don't have a country. So you make your choice. I mean, if you don't like our country, travel. And if you find a place better, stay. And stop messing with our past.
I like that, Brian. The book is very important, and it pushes back against a lot of the nonsense that is infecting our current discourse, the historic illiteracy. Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Put a Fast Forward for Racial Equality. So let's dive into this, that one element, Brian, which I think is important. Everyone is born into a world that they didn't create. It's what you do with that world that is how we measure. It says in the Bible, Noah was a righteous man in his generation. Not just the righteous man generally, but in his generation, comparing to the people around him, he was pretty awesome. We should always judge people in the context and the time of which they are in. Brian, as a historian, why is the smugness of the current orthodoxies always applied to those 100, 200, 300 years ago? I think it's honestly one of the most frustrating and damaging patterns that we've seen in recent years.
You know, what's crazy is I do these things. I do these stage shows. I got a couple coming up, one in Illinois and one in Pennsylvania. And I talk about all the books and I on stage and in a more unscripted fashion with some production value to it. Because in the beginning, I thought, wouldn't it be great to be able to speak before I sign my George Washington book or the Teddy Roosevelt book? Or excuse me, the Thomas Jefferson book. And a lot of times there's no time. You walk in, there's a crowd. And you want to sign the books and go. And I go, when you go to give a speech, you never know if that corporation that asked you to come in is going to be involved in some scandal the next day. And they go, who's your last keynote speaker? Oh, it's Brian Kilmeade. Okay, he's part of when GM collapsed. Or we never know. So we create our own events. And in the beginning, I thought it was just going to be great just to be an opportunity to sell books. Now it's like a mission on a war to win the war on history. Because the 1619 Project was the formal first salvo. But it's been happening for quite a long time. I mean, I'm older than you, and in 1976, I was in grade school, and they launched this thing called Roots, the most successful miniseries ever, averaged $60 million a night. It was the story of slavery and all its brutality. Nobody was ever ducking our past. I don't know what people are talking about. And no one ever said, oh, segregation, not that bad. Slavery, well, it happens. Nobody, Republican or Democrat, especially because most of these people were Democrats. They kept on pushing to keep it and tried to almost reinstall it in the 20th century. Having said that, we've come a long way. And I just thought by telling the story of two men and what they did to get where they're at, I also stumbled on a situation with Booker T. Washington where people don't like what would now be termed as conservative message. Don't worry about where you're at. Don't worry about society's ills. Overcome it. Don't become a subscriber to grievance. And there was one joke that he relays. In retrospect, it tells you where we were as a country. So he has a controversial dinner at the White House. Never before as a black man ate with a president's family, which was white. And for some reason back then, at times, it was controversial. So it had never been done before, causing all types of uproars and riots. So one day he's waiting by a train in the deep South. And a white guy comes walking up to him and says, are you Booker T. Washington? So yeah, he goes, you're a great man. He says, no, Teddy Roosevelt's a great man. He goes, I used to think so until he had you over for dinner.
That's a beautiful story. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Do you know that the average American spends about 20 years in retirement? That's a long time to live without a steady income. We want to make sure you enjoy every moment of it and don't outlive your money. Retirement is about more than just investments. It's about living your best life. Let's not retire, let's pivot. My friends at Pax Financial Group developed a course for the sole purpose of helping you pivot. If you want your own free guide of pivoting into the next chapter of life with purpose, visit paxfg.com/charlie That is PAXFG.com/Charlie. I have some of my money managed by PAX Financial. They do a wonderful job. And remember, retirement is about more than just investments. The Charlie Kirk endorsement of the PAX Financial Group LLC was given for compensation, which creates an incentive to recommend PAX's advisory services. You need to make sure that disclaimer is very clear. So check it out, PAXFG.com/Charlie. So, Brian, I want to talk some current events here, but I want to encourage the audience, too, to go to Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blazed a Path for Racial Equality. You know, things are changing in real time. Talk about how this Israel issue is breaking the left. This has been, it's amazing, Brian, not the border, not the economy. This is, without a doubt, one of the most provable declines of Democrat support we've seen in the modern era. What is driving this, Brian? What's going on?
Well, I'm going to start with a question. You are more in touch with the next generation than anybody I know. You go on college campuses on a regular basis. I was totally blindsided by the anti-Semitism that rose up, the pro-Palestinian attitude, which actually takes a degree of education to have a position. It's not like I thought George Floyd was unjustly killed. Obviously, I'm going to protest. I get that. But how do these people understand the whole Palestinian cause? Since when has that resonated anywhere in America? It takes actually opening up a book, reading some stories, getting a perspective, watching a YouTube video to say, okay, who's wrong, who's right? How did we get here? Instead, an instinct instantly, I'm against Israel. Really? Where'd that come from? I am against them. I want to cease fire. Really? Where did that come from? I don't believe that October 7th was that bad or happened at all. Where did that come from? And then to see this Palestinian / Hamas protest come up on the streets is absolutely insane. What is crazy is the reaction. So these American people who support the American Jewish community, Jews and non-Jews, but people with some logic who understand what Israel is to America and what America is to Israel, knew what side we thought we were on as a country. And all of a sudden, that's the minority position. And we're seeing all these uprisings everywhere. And you see this people marching with Nazi flags in America. I can't believe the series of events that's happened. And to me, it's got to be organized. How could this? I think it's the same people that are a problem with race in America and the George Floyd riots. And they were upset about America, period, about police or whatever. These are the same people who are activists for the Palestinian cause. And I think we're in really disturbing. And for Joe Biden, who evidently Democrats pride themselves on the youth vote, well, this youth vote, while we were looking somewhere else, just left him. Mm-hmm. And he's stunned, too. We thought Tlaib was on the fringe. She's mainstream next generation.
Yeah, you know, Brian, it's a bittersweet thing. I was texting with a very good Jewish friend of mine over the weekend, and I said, hey, look at this poll. It shows that Donald Trump is beating Joe Biden in the youth vote. And he made a great point. He said, well, why? And part of it is inflation and the outreach that we're doing, but part of it is that young people, they don't want anybody that sides with Israel. Brian, from your 35,000-foot view, what is the main reason why younger voters, younger people are so against the state of Israel?
It has to be organized. It has to be. I mean, these are the same people that don't know who was in World War II. They don't even know which side. I mean, I'm sure if you said who's the Axis powers, who was on the Axis powers and who was on the Allied powers, they wouldn't even know. They wouldn't know what you're talking about. How could they possibly go back thousands of years or at least 80 years in Israel history? It has to be organized. Anti-American organizations, this has got to be financed. And I wouldn't doubt that most of these people are getting paid to do what they did. I have a relative of mine in Tulane, and it's 45% Jewish. They looked over, all of a sudden, all these Palestinian and Hamas flags are flying. Where'd they come from? The outside. These people don't go to that school. So I'm wondering what organization is trying to infiltrate this country. And at the same week, Charlie, think about this. Bin Laden letter to America gets published. You would think it would end up in the trash bin. Instead, it turns out we have influencers saying, oh, my God, my head is blown. I have to rethink America and my loyalties. Your head is blown. You're a woman. If you lived in Bin Laden's vision of America, you would not have a job. You would not be able to leave the house. You wouldn't be able to drive. If you're gay, you can jump off and pick the building you'll be thrown off of.
if you're transgender, you think they were going to ask you your pronouns? I mean, it, to me, there's so many confounding elements to this story. But Joe Biden ends up paying the price. And here's why he's guilty, is because they were fomenting all this stuff. It's just like the cancel culture. Hollywood starts it, and then they start blowing themselves up with the bazooka they let go. And that's the same thing. He can't figure it out. He's actually doing the right thing by supporting Israel, and it's blowing up in his face because the country has been taken over and needs to be taken back, at least the next generation does.
The Osama bin Laden thing is really unbelievable, and it shows the power of TikTok and this new digital media, and also a generation that does not know 9/11. Again, from the scriptures, there's that beautiful verse that says, and then rose a king of Egypt who did not know Joseph. There's a generation that does not know 9/11. Brian, your reaction, you covered 9/11 as it was happening. You lived in New York as a New Yorker, and the aftermath, just now seeing a generation 22 years later embracing Osama bin Laden. I thought Megyn Kelly's take on that was really strong. A lot of other people online have been talking openly and candidly about how parents have not been doing their our job. This is a wake-up call for a lot of people, Republican or Democrat.
Yeah, I just don't know anybody in my life that has to educate their kids on it. It was just part of what they grew up on. I mean, 9/11, my kids were in like second, sixth, and seventh grade. You'd have to tell them what was going on. So they knew. I'm not sure if it's in the curriculum or not, but let's look at this. This guy attacks our country, looks at us as the great Satan, does everything he can to kill as many Americans as possible. For 20 years, somebody in your neighborhood went to fight in your name and came back, maybe not the same person, and you never thought to ask them, what were they doing? What were they fighting for? What's this Islamic extremism? So I'm dumbfounded by the idiocy and the ignorance, which was exponentially accelerated by the pandemic, which gave all these other 18 to 22-year-olds another reason not to educate themselves, but to live on Twitter, and to live on TikTok. I just think that this is a wake-up call for everybody. Just like the pandemic was a wake-up call for parents, now it's a wake-up call for the country. Those kids of yours are protesting against fundamental American values, and they're with the other side. Not only are they not subscribing, they're with the other side. And Charlie, they got a terrible product. Who wants to be an Islamic extremist? Who wants to give up rights every single day, take a vow of poverty, do not have a job that's fulfilling, live your whole life to blow up your neighbor? Read some of this stuff. It's a terrible letter. I mean, you would think we used to have a generation that would be susceptible to perpetual spring break. I spent too much time on the beach. I didn't study. You know, I hung out with my friends. I failed out of school. Now I went to school. I came back. I hate the country. What happened?
Well, that's a really smart point. I mean, there was definitely, you know, radicalism in the 60s and 70s. And then for a couple decades, this is so smart, Brian, that the number one criticism to young people is, oh, they don't work hard. They do too much dope. You know, they're, you know, into the indulgence. Now it's like, wait a second. Like, can you go back to doing weed and like staying up till 3 a.m.? I actually prefer like a super lethargic, you know, had a fun time in Cabo than, oh, I don't know, flying the modern day Nazi flag. That's a super smart point.
Yeah, I just don't know what they're offering. I mean, we have a better product. I mean, in every way, shape, or form. And you know what they should do, Charlie? We should make them just say, listen, are you a pro-Hamas? Yeah, I really like what they represent. They're oppressed. Okay, great. Because there's some openings. And I can tell you exactly where they are. And we can provide the transportation. I think you should live that life. Why are we leaving you here stuck with the horrible Westerners who maybe want to go on vacation or work a second job in order to make ends meet or have a family and want to treat women equally? So you don't want to be stuck in that tornado of indulgence. So we're going to send you over to Hamas. Let's talk about it. I mean, we got the son of Hamas's founder on. I have him on regularly. And he just talks about these people being brainwashed from day one. And that's in Hamas's world. I don't know how they did it in America. How did they do it to America?
It is partially because of our institutions. And there's a lot of Muslim Brotherhood money, which I know you've been following, Brian. A lot of Brotherhood money has been flowing into these institutions. But also, you know, do not underestimate the contempt and the resentment that left-wing ideology has for America. They will partner with any organization, the Chinese Communist Party, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, as long as they say they hate the West. All right, everybody. The holidays and big family feasts are upon us. But in D.C., there's no bigger turkey than Senate Bill 1339. It's still being pushed by that radical rascal, Bernie Sanders. Bad guy. I don't say that lightly. He is a bad person. I'll tell you, he's a Marxist. Senate Bill 1339 is Bernie's latest attempt to sneak in a backdoor takeover of more of our health care. He falsely claims it will lower prescription drug prices. But S1339 will actually just do the opposite. It'll handcuff pharmacy benefit managers, who are currently saving millions of dollars on an average of $1,040 a year. Bernie is hoping that despite thousands of your fellow Americans already going to lowermydrugprices.com to stand up against S1339, you'll be too busy making holiday plans or getting ready for a year-end vacation to stop him from a power grab on your health care. So here's what's happening. The Marxist, the commie, he's trying to put this bill in. Listen very carefully. I'm urging you to keep up the pressure against passage of S1339 by going to lowermydrugprices.com. The Council for Citizens Against Government Waste says if you don't want a socialized system that takes away your personal health care choices, increases cost, and makes you wait longer to see the doctor, go today to lowermydrugprices.com to stop the Senate from passing the Sanders bill. Remember, we have momentum, but we need your help today. The Charlie Kirk Show brought to you in part by Council for Citizens Against Government Waste. Again, it's Senate Bill 1339. We must stop it. Lowermydrugprices.com. Brian, I always ask this question of a guest that does a research piece. When you decided to write the book Teddy and Booker T, what piece of information or story did you discover or learn that you're like, wow, I did not know that before, that is the most noteworthy to you?
Let me see. That's a great question. I would say this. I would say when Booker T. Washington, I would say overall, there was two things that happened. Did you're a positive thinking guy, right? You're someone who sets goals.
Always.
And I think that I'm reading Booker T. Washington and I'm listening to what he wants to accomplish and how he did it. It's the precursor to Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill. Think of precursor to Norman Vincent Peale and Anthony Robbins today. He did not know how to read, and he was 10 years old. They wrote 1 in 8 on the burlap sack he had to fill with salt in the salt mines. He's like, what is that? He goes, those are numbers. What are numbers? That guy ends up being the most educated guy in the country who starts his own university. And also, when you really want something, even without the social safety net, things will happen. And Booker T. Washington, time and time again, would dream about getting an education. Where his mom would saw the patch and got him a dictionary. Couldn't believe how lucky he was. Then he hears his friends complaining about a woman, Mrs. Ruffner, who's so hard, she's impossible to work for. I'm quitting that job. I'm going back to the salt mines. He needed out of the salt mines. He hears it. This woman ends up changing his life. She just wanted things done right. And then he ends up using Mrs. Ruffner to propel him to Hampton, where he gets another mentor that sees nothing but potential in him, recommends him to Tuskegee, General Armstrong. And I believe in relooking at his life and Teddy Roosevelt's life, they willed themselves to reaching their goal, reaching their potential. And I think you can learn something from what they did. Just because we know them, it doesn't mean if you want to own a flower shop or your own gym or you want to be president of the United States, if you want something bad enough, it can happen. And that's really, I can only say that in America, because we are still the land of opportunity, not the land of outcomes. Just give me an opportunity. That's all these two said to each other. You give an opportunity, I'm going to give other people an opportunity, but I am not going to rig the game. I think in America, we're trying to rig the game and make excuses when you don't win the championship, get the medal, get the job, or win the race.
Dream, believe, work, achieve. So the book is really important, and I want you guys to check it out. Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blazed a Path for Racial Equality. I'm going to ask you an unfair question here, Brian, but studying Teddy Roosevelt in particular, who in America today reminds you closest to Teddy Roosevelt?
It's Trump, and just like Andrew Jackson, too. He's a little Trump. Trump is a little Andrew Jackson, a little Teddy Roosevelt. And the things they write about Roosevelt, for example, Mark Twain, never liked Teddy Roosevelt. They thought he was all show. They thought, what is this guy who's always bringing attention to himself? And what happened in New York? He was busting up everything, turning the tables over, not subscribing to the power structure. They had to get rid of him. So they kicked him to vice president. He ends up being president of the United States. And when he was in the military, they once said, this guy is ridiculous. He keeps saying we want war. No, we got to defend ourselves. He's crazy. Ends up being a war hero and coming back. So his whole life, people thought he was a little bit crazy, and they could not believe it to a degree. They didn't think he was worthy of the presidency. He ends up really defining the presidency and being this incredible leader because he was so unorthodox. Jackson was the same way. And I think that's what you get with Trump. I'm not putting him in the same category. One never reached his 60th birthday, and the other 77 with a businessman. But I would say as disruptors, as focused, and as unstoppable. They're both unstoppable forces. You weren't going to deny Roosevelt. And I think we see what's going on right now. Trump is queued up to, right now, got his favorite to win the presidency.
That's
back
right.
Again.
The comeback kid. That's right. And unlike Teddy Roosevelt, I don't think he's going to run in the Bull Moose Party. But I agree. There's, and Teddy Roosevelt and Trump are both class traitors. They were both supposed to be part of the ruling class, and they went kind of down to go fight for the working man. Brian, excellent analysis. Thank you so much. You're a great friend. Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blazed a Trail for Racial Equality. Check it out. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns.
What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.